Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. To continue our history lesson, let's learn a bit more from a new documentary about black memorabilia. It's a controversial sector of collectibles culture. If you go to certain antique shows, you can find these collectible banks featuring a racist depiction of a black man with, you know, well, we'll just talk about it later. You know those Mammy salt and pepper shakers as well? These items have permeated American consumer culture for centuries. But as documentarian Chico Colvard explores, these products are not a thing of the past. They're still being replicated and purchased today. In fact, there's great demand. Let's take a listen to an antiques dealer featured in his film, her name's Joy, talking about a black memorabilia show in Maryland.
Right now, black history is probably the hottest collectible going. There's just a growing appreciation of the items.
Traditional business with black memorabilia, parts, doll, and black fell.
But the shows like that have not even come close to what their potential is.
The documentary Black Memorabilia, which aired on PBS earlier this month, is now available at pbs.org. To take a closer look at the three stages in the lives of these artifacts, production, consumption, and reclamation, Chico Colvard joins us now. Hi, Chico.
Hi, Allison. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great. When was the first time you ever saw a piece of black memorabilia or have a memory of it?
Gosh. Like a lot of us, I grew up pretty unconsciously consuming a pretty steady diet of racist memorabilia. And I mean, at the time, when I was 4 or 5, whatever it was, I wasn't thinking of it as racist memorabilia. I was thinking of it as, you know, Uncle Remus Erastus on the cream of wheat box, or Aunt Jemima on the syrup and pancake batter, and the little rascals were just entertaining. but it wasn't until much later in life when I had an opportunity to sort of look back on that material culture that I was consuming and realize just what it was.
You tell us early on in the film that this is an exploration for you. You want to get some answers. What were some of the questions you had about black memorabilia?
Well, I mean, in some ways, what I wanted to do is I wanted to make a more layered story that moved beyond the perverse attractions and the absolute, rejection of black memorabilia, or more importantly, the people who happen to have a relationship to this material culture. Because I just didn't think that the conversation would really go anywhere if I just did that, if I just painted these people into a corner as one-dimensional people, as racist. And that's, I'm not saying that the people in the film or other people who your previous guests were talking about are not knowingly or unknowingly, wittingly, unwittingly perpetuating racist stereotypes. But what I had realized in my own experiences, even, you know, that when I was a kid and was completely unaware that I was consuming racist memorabilia, to a point where, you know, when I was later in college and was introduced to Marlon Riggs and Ethnic Notions and, you know, Malcolm X and you name it, and thought, you know, naively that I could go into the antique stores and flea markets and eradicate all this stuff from the stream of commerce. I knew that there are a number of different people out there that probably had a number of different positions about these objects. And I thought that would be a much more interesting story to tell.
Yeah, the film is somewhat about the ecosystem, the first two-thirds of it, right? So
right.
You talk about you go to China, where you find out these replicas of these N-word banks, as they say on the back of them. It's a depiction of a man's head with big red lips. Tell us a little bit about where these replicas are made.
Well, quite frankly, they're made everywhere, and I didn't mean to pick on China. I could have picked on India or parts of Africa or Mexico or, you know, somebody's backyard right here, you know, in the good old United States. I happened to land on China because visually I thought it was, you know, just the aesthetics of the place I thought were really appealing. And it challenged a lot of my assumptions that I had about how and where these things were being made. In my mind, I had imagined that it was some factory and there were assembly belts and, you know, workers were wearing, I don't know, you know, like uniforms and hairnets and, you know, had a very kind of sanitized, kind of detached relationship to these objects. And what I discovered was this kind of torn down, like, brick building in the middle of a cornfield, and a very antiquated kind of method that dates back hundreds of years for how they would make these cast iron objects. And the work ethic, you know, it really surprised me, the level of detail and care that they brought to these objects, you know, dare I say it, gave it a sort of sense of beauty that I just had not anticipated. And the storyteller in me found that to be very compelling and challenging, you know, a lot of my assumptions, and therefore I assumed it would probably challenge a lot of the viewers' assumptions about who are the people that make these things and how are these things made.
Do the people who make these things understand what they're making?
No, not entirely. Even though there are, you know, there are very sort of similar kind of reactions and racist stereotypes about, you know, black people, mostly, you know, people who are coming into China, and, you know, from parts of Africa, but also, you know, just a lot of our, you know, U.S. stereotypes and tropes have managed to export and make their way around the globe. Quite effectively. And so there is some evidence of that there. I don't think that the people who at this factory were making these things were making it with malicious intent. You know, I don't think they were like, ha-ha, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm going to put this in the stream of commerce and that'll be the way I take the black man down. I'm pretty sure that wasn't happening. I think these are people who were making something, didn't have a strong sense of what it meant once this thing left their factory and ended up in the hands of somebody across, you know, on the other side of the planet. I think that they were making something in order to survive, to put food on the table. And they cared very deeply about, the production value, just the quality of the craftsmanship of the work.
My guest is Chico Colvard. We're talking about his PBS documentary, Black Memorabilia. So you talked about these banks coming over and entering the commerce stream in the U.S. You follow an antiques dealer who has a lot of this and sells a lot of this at antique shows. Tell us a little bit about your impressions of this woman, Joy.
Yeah, so I met, you opened the top of the piece with a little clip from the Maryland flea market there, and I went there. At the time, I was going around different places with another film project, and I would sort of shoot around the edges. You know, I would go and do a Q&A or something, and then I'd go out and look for the nearest antique store or flea market, and I found this place, and I walked in, and it was mostly a lot of black antiques dealers who were in there selling old, like, baseball cards and things like that. And then I look over and I see a booth with Joy, white woman, standing in front of this booth with KKK robes and Confederate flags and Nazi insignia and things like that. And she was standing next to a guy who was selling Black Panther Party memorabilia. And they were,
wow,
they were having a what looked like a pleasant conversation. And I thought, well, that's interesting. So I approached her, and she was very, you know, camera ready and very much wanting to talk about, her work and the history of her work. And as she sees it as real Black history. And she sees that this is representative of a history of travail where Black people have overcome and should be proud, you know, of our history. She has a very emancipated sort of view of what she does. And I also
But it walks right up to the line of being problematic.
Well, I mean, you know, you could easily argue that she crosses the line.
Yeah, and, I was being kind.
I mean, you know, there is a wide sort of, I think, cognitive dissonance between her saying that this is sort of, you know, she's sort of a gatekeeper, you know, a sort of sentinel kind of guarding the path of this particular history. But at the same time, she knows or can't always control who she's selling to. And the people that I saw, you know, oftentimes coming to visit her booth, you know, had swastikas tattooed or Confederate flags and all of that. And in her world, in that place, you know, particularly, well, I'll just say in her world down there in the South, but it's not exclusive to the South, of course, is, you know, they're like, they're good Confederate sympathizers and bad ones. And they're like good Nazis and bad Nazis. And, to me, you know, in my mind, they were all the same. As much as I tried to sort of, you know, remain judgment-free as a storyteller, it was really difficult. It was very difficult for me to see how she wasn't, in some way, sort of accountable for perpetuating these stereotypes, and not just stereotypes, but in her case, you know, we're talking about the other side of racism. We're talking about white supremacy.
Right. My guest is Chico Kovar. The name of his documentary is Black Memorabilia. There's a third part of the film. We're going to run out of time before we talk about it, but it's about an artist named Alexandria Smith from Brooklyn who is trying to reclaim the idea of blackface. And it's absolutely worth watching. It's available at pbs.org. Chico, thank you so much for joining us on All of It.
Thanks, Allison.